This meeting is being recorded.
Okay, well, good morning, everyone. And sounds like everyone's doing great. We are calling to order the full board of the Orange County Workforce Development Board. I'm Terry Hollingsworth, chair of the board. And we'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance. All right, right hand over your heart. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right. Moving on to board member roll call.
Gloria Alvarado.
Present.
Jesse Benron.
Here.
Kathy Boyd. Rob Claudio.
Here.
Steve Curio.
Here.
Mike Daniel.
Here.
Lorraine Holland-Lays.
Here.
Terry Hollingsworth.
Here.
Chris Horton. Trung Lee. John Luker.
Here.
Annalisa Lukes.
Present.
Doug Mangione.
Here.
Barbara Mason. Gary Mackin. Ernesto Medrano. Carlos Aragon.
Present.
Mike Ruin. Todd Sword.
Here.
And Brignell Tumor Bias.
I see Mike just joined, so.
Yeah, Mike's on too, sorry.
No worries, thank you. Brignell Tumor Bias. And we do have quorum.
Great, thank you. Moving on to public comment.
Chair, we did not receive any requests to speak in advance. There are members of the public present. If there are members of the public that would like to address the board, please use the hand raise icon or press star 9 and I will unmute you. And seeing none, Chair.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. All right, we have two action items. And the first action item has to do with the board strategic plan, the Orange County Workforce Board strategic plan for program years 2022 to 2024. And so we have a guest presenter, or Karma, would you like to set it up first before we pass it over to David?
Absolutely. Good morning, everyone. As a reminder, the Workforce Development Board is supposed to state the vision for our workforce area. And that includes determining what our mission is, what our value is, how do we plan on engaging with the community, who are we here to serve. Previously, the Workforce Development Board met a couple of months ago, actually, with David Schinder to develop a strategic plan. And as a result of that, David drafted a plan that was posted for public comment. And today, what we're going to hear is the final draft of the strategic plan. What we'd like to do is we have an action item to take a vote. If members of the board approve this strategic plan, we will post this as our plan for the Orange County Workforce Development Board. With that said, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to David Schinder to go over the strategic plan.
Thank you, Karma. Thank you, Terry, and members of the board. It's really a pleasure to be with you this morning. And for those of you who participated back in March during our strategic planning session, it's great to see you again. Do we have, Karma, the PowerPoint available here? Because if not, I can just speak to the plan here. I am not able to pull it up on my system for some reason.
David, if you give me just a moment, we will get it pulled up.
Okay. And while you're pulling it up, Karma, I'm not going to delay any. I'm just going to jump into where we would be. So as you can see from the item that was included in your agenda packet, we have before you for your consideration today in terms of a vote to approve a strategic plan that would be for the 3-year period from July 1st 2022 to June 30th, 2025. One of the things I'd like to say about this plan right from the onset is it in no way does this plan diminish the content of the other plans that your board has developed and published with regard to compliance with the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. That would include, for instance, your four-year local plan and your four-year regional plan. Not only does this plan not diminish those plans, as we'll see as we go through its content, one of the things that the board members who help craft this plan believe is that it will help to enhance the development of future federally required planning documents. So just by way of background, and this is in the overview section of the plan that you have before you, a couple of things I wanted to highlight for you, and I'm going to try to keep my comments brief and work at a fairly rapid pace, but this plan was developed, it was actually authored by me, but it was using information gathered in the form of input and dialogue during a one-day strategic planning session back on March 23rd. We had a significant percentage of the board members present for that meeting, including our chair, and we spent the day talking about strategic vision for the board. So that's one of the things I would say by way of overview. Yeah, we could just go to the next slide, Karma. We're right there. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. So in terms of the overview, the other thing I would highlight for you is that the focus of our strategic plan is first and foremost on establishing a mission and vision for the board, along with a set of corresponding core values. The other thing that this plan does is it suggests to us local accountability standards that the board would focus on beyond federally prescribed standards. When we think of those federal standards, they're really participant driven, and the standards that the board members recommended as local accountability standards are really focused on moving the system as a whole forward. Again, the plan also touches upon goals, not just for the workforce system, but for the board itself, and then highlights some strategic initiatives that the board would embrace over this three-year period. One of the things that I enjoyed the most from our discussions back on March 23rd, and I think it was Annalisa who brought this, who raised this in terms of our thinking. Might have been someone else, so my apologies if my recollection's wrong, but there was this notion of our board remaining opportunity ready. And that really seemed to fit with the spirit of input and recommendations board members were making. So I thought it was kind of an apt motto for our strategic plan. Our strategic plan is really the document that helps us remain opportunity ready. So I'm gonna take you through 12 sections of the plan, spending about a minute, 2 minutes on each. So if we could just go to the next slide, the next section of the plan is on purpose. And I really just said this, so I won't spend much time at all. If you're trying to zero in on what the content and the purpose of the plan is, it's the following. A, to communicate to ourselves and to others what our defining principles and core values are, including our mission and vision. Also, our priorities, specifically with respect to service delivery to our key customer groups, job seekers and businesses. We want the plan to express some broad framework, or a broad framework rather, for local accountability standards. Again, those are standards that would affect and reflect the entire system. We want to establish broad goals for the system, and then again for the board itself. And then the plan also seeks to embrace some strategic initiatives. I'll be drilling down into all of these as we walk through the rest of this slide presentation and the plan itself. So let's go to the next slide. So one of the things that we highlight in the plan is how the plan is intended to be a living document. It has a three-year shelf life, as it were, but it's constantly going to be adjusting itself, and the board is going to be adjusting the plan to reflect the ever-changing nature of the environment or environments in which we operate, the business environment, things that are happening politically with regard to legislation, et cetera. So I just highlight for you, as the plan does itself here, some of those factors that might affect the content of the plan or the need to review and revise the plan over the 3-year period. This would include things like a changing economy and labor market. I think we all see right now how in flux the labor market really is in the wake of the pandemic, and that we have to remain at the ready to respond accordingly. Just in our dialogue prior to starting the meeting today, Karma raised the fact that we're now seeing once again more layoffs occurring, and we're responding to WARN notices, something we hadn't seen in the last year when hiring was the order of the day. So we have to be, forever ready, opportunity ready, as it were. Emerging local and regional priorities. So as communities make us aware of priorities, we need to be ready to respond. As many of you probably know, there are bills in at the federal level to amend and renew WIOA. That happens every few years. It's written right. Right into the legislature, reduced, and certainly as it's passed and signed into law, we have to be ready to respond. Same with state mandates. As state legislation, state priorities change, we too at the local and regional levels need to be ready. Industry trends and needs of local businesses may too require us to review and revise the plan. And we're also required and are affected by the need to modify, update, and revised system goals based on just guidance that we get based on the funding we receive through our formula allocation and special grants. And indeed, there may be other priorities that the board itself identifies that would require some sort of revision to the plan. So just wanted to highlight for you that this plan is not intended to be static. It's intended to inform our actions on an ongoing basis. So it's something you'll see pieces of this plan brought forward to the board periodically, and there'll be a wholesale review of the plan that will be presented, facilitated for the board no less than annually. If we might take a look at the next slide, I'd like to talk about how we think this plan is going to be really useful in terms of the board fulfilling its responsibilities. So as a governor-designated local workforce area, and as a governor-designated local board, there are a whole series of compliance processes that your board participates in on an annual basis, on a biennial basis, on a 3-year time frame, on a 4-year time frame. These include, but are not limited to, the types of requirements I've listed here. Every 4 years, we do a local workforce plan, and that's very prescriptive, as opposed to this plan, which board members yourselves crafted. These other plans are very prescriptive in terms of their content, but with the type of information that we've embedded into our strategic plan that we're reviewing right now and you'll be voting on today, we feel that it will help give shape and inform the rest of these required processes. Our local plan, our regional plan, and the Orange County Workforce Board is the lead on that regional plan. Every few years, you submit an application for subsequent designation. Orange County was designated by the governor, are you ready for it, 1983. You've been a local board, a local area since that time. And so every few years, you submit for local or subsequent designation. Board recertification to make sure that the composition of the board complies with federal statutes. certification of our job centers, the selection of service providers, whether or not we pursue grant opportunities, and then finally developing and expanding regional initiatives. All of those, all of these processes, some required, some optional, can really be informed by the content of this plan, especially things like the mission and vision and the values that the board members put forward for inclusion in the plan. That really gives us, I think one of the terms that we use to describe our vision is that it's our North Star. It's really a guide for us in moving forward. So that's one of the things we think this plan really brings to us. And speaking of vision, let's take a look at the next slide. So, you know, most organizations have a vision that is spelled out. So the moment new board members, you know, for instance, join the Workforce Development Board, you know, the first thing we share with them is, here's the mission and the vision. And we had not done that in the timeframe of WIOA, our authorizing legislation. So we talked about the fact that a well-crafted vision statement really defines what our products or services and who our customers are, and that it provides us a basis for understanding what we want to do. So the members of your board, having met on March 23rd, crafted and are recommending the following vision, and that's to lead a workforce system that provides education, resources, and collaborative opportunities to benefit job seekers, employers, and entrepreneurs, and to support the economic prosperity and competitiveness of Orange County. I have to tell you, I've been stumbling with my English the last couple of days. I'm just back from 2 weeks in Chile, where I got to practice my schoolboy Spanish, and all of a sudden English feels like a foreign language to me. So I think give me another couple of days and I'll be fluent in English again. It was a pleasure to speak Spanish down there, but it seems to be where my brain is going now. So this mission, we believe, will really serve as a guide for establishing priorities, setting goals, and determining how to best develop, deploy, and assess the utilization of resources throughout our workforce system. So the vision is present and the vision is practical. Let's take a look on the next slide and examine the vision that the board members came up with, which I'm equally in awe of. I think the board did a great job on this. So a board's vision statement typically focuses, as it says here, on idealistic goals and aspirations, which describe what the future would look like if our organization, the board, were to completely and fully achieve its mission. Visions are timeless. So even if strategies and approaches change, usually the vision will remain the same. And visions should be inspirational and credible and promote commitment. And they tend to promote commitment that energizes those who affect it. As I said, visions present a connection with the future and really establish a standard for excellence, which is for us a North Star. So what we came up with that day, what the board members came up with, is the following with respect to your board's vision. Orange County, an Orange County committed to empowering human potential, in which all individuals are able to achieve their career aspirations, which in turn support and align with the goals of business across key industry sectors. I think that's a good North Star vision. So to complement our vision and our mission, the board also contemplated what are its core values, what are its core beliefs? And if we can take a look at the next slide, we narrowed those down. It was a very long list when we started. So core values are really guiding principles that form a foundation for what organizations are, what they believe, and what they want to be going forward. So we got a whole bunch of ideas up on the board. And then when it boiled down to it, we ended up with what I like to call our IEEER. These are our five top values. And doesn't minimize, you know, other values that we may share and hold, you know, as being important. But these five encapsulate what the board members felt was most important to both the board and the workforce system. I'll go through them quickly. First is innovation, the ability to think new, to be responsive to new changes, just the ability to craft innovative strategies around new problems or perhaps lingering ones. Empathy, the ability of our system to relate to, understand, and respond to our customers in a way that feels authentic to them and authentic to us. Equity, a principle that systems, businesses, institutions across the nation and the world are embracing more fully. Excellence, just doing things to a point of greatness that we can really call them out as being excellent. And then responsiveness. We realize that we are part of a system that serves customers, that embraces partners, that shares in common goals and aspirations with stakeholders. And we're often, as a workforce system and a board, being called upon to be responsive to the needs, to the goals, to the objective of others. So those are the core principles we've embedded in this 3-year strategic plan. Let's take a look at the next section, which is about priorities in serving customers. So we have these two key customer groups, folks who are looking for jobs, and they may even be incumbent workers looking to improve the quality of their jobs or the jobs that they qualify for, and also businesses. So just narrowed down in terms of priorities, we came up with the following 6. We want to focus on vulnerable and underserved communities, not to the exclusion of others, but to give a focus on those communities. There are certain populations that have been historically underserved by our programs, and we want to shine a light on the needs of individuals within those communities and those populations. We also want to leverage opportunities, more and more opportunities for job seekers to earn and learn. You know, so many of our programs historically have required folks to learn outside of a paid working environment. And when folks can earn a living, earn a wage, access a stipend, if it were the case, while they're learning, the chances of them participating, completing, and moving into unsubsidized employment are yet greater. We want to build pipelines of skilled and job-ready workers for business, particularly those in high growth and high demand sectors of the regional economy. This includes manufacturing, it includes healthcare, it includes hospitality, IT, and other key industries. To that point, we want to be the go-to source for businesses in preparing and sourcing job-ready candidates. There's a lot of competition out there. We are the public workforce system. We receive federal and to some extent state funds to do the work that we do to prepare job seekers, to work with businesses, to fill their talent needs and their skilled worker needs. But we really want to establish ourselves as the go-to source for businesses throughout the Orange County communities that we serve. We want to support job seekers' development of entrepreneurial skills. It came up several times in conversations, in recommendations from members of your board, that entrepreneurial skills are great skills for those who intend to start their own business, but they too are skills that any worker can use in any setting. There's skills related to prioritizing work, to working with a team, et cetera. So there's a lot to be learned there. And then finally, as we said at the onset, one of our goals is to remain opportunity ready. So if there are opportunities that present themselves to your board, to the system, we want to be ready to take advantage of them. Let's take a look at the next slide. This is where we talk a little bit about, in this section of the plan, about our local accountability standards. And this is really a framework. We will need to drill down as a board and set even more specific criteria around that. But again, what we wanted to highlight for you this morning is that these standards supplement existing standards. WIOA comes with its own set of measures, but they're related to individual job seekers who we serve and individual businesses that we serve. And we really wanted to create a framework where we're measuring our progress as a system. So your board came up with these as our accountability standards. And again, we need to add some more details in. So that'll be part of the work of the board over the next 3 years. But here they are. The appropriateness of the services that we provide to customers, how appropriate, how apt, how on the mark are the services that we're making available to the job seekers and businesses we serve. How are we doing with customer engagement, really identifying and then connecting to those customers that are our priorities, our priority sectors, our priority populations? What's the customer experience like? Is it of a quality, and does it have the content that we desire? Can we focus more on outcomes versus simply outputs, affecting change where change is beneficial? What's the return on investment? This is something that the board suggested we should start to examine more closely. We're stewards of a significant amount of federal and state resources. We need to start tracking what the return on the use of those resources is. And then what's the quality of our services? What our customers have to say about it? This is, again, somewhat attached to both in customer engagement and customer experience. But at the end of the day, when we've served customers, what's that? What does the quality of those services look like? So we're going to be bringing back the local accountability standards are part of this strategic plan the board has recommended, and we'll be bringing that back to, again, drill down more into. Let's talk about critical system goals, because we've got goals in two areas here embedded in the plan. So if we look at the next slide, the first is system goals. And so these would be goals for the workforce system, how we deliver services, who we deliver services to. So we have here, I believe it was 7, strategically engage with the business community, meaning to really focus where the greatest opportunities exist or appear to be emerging. Implement and sustain industry partnership. This is an area that we're just beginning to flesh out, forming partnerships among businesses in key industries, improving the usability of data reports. We use lots of data reports, and we'd like to make those reports both more friendly and usable and intelligible to the board members and staff and partners and others who use them. We'd like to build and strengthen alliances with other systems. Lots of systems do their own thing, and the quality of our work can be measured to a great extent by how much and how well, rather, we ally ourselves with others. We would like to update system technology, expanding the availability of online services, and then also assess the effectiveness of the strategies that we use in Orange County. But if there's a question, I can take a question now, or we've allowed time for questions at the end. Does someone have a question? Okay, then I'm almost done. I'm gonna get through the rest of this really quickly. How am I doing on time? Okay, I would give myself a C- on my use of time here, but I'm gonna get better. Let's go for goals for the board. Let's go, that's the next one. So we've got, I think, just 3 here. So past the critical system goals, we've got some actual goals for the Workforce Development Board itself. And so what we want to do, and these came from board members themselves, is address gaps in board membership. where we could get greater participation from segments of the eligible membership than we currently have, improve the engagement with all OCWD members, and then finally develop strategies through which the board members can have a more active role in the community, particularly with business, as ambassadors. Then finally, we identified three strategic initiatives for the board over the next 3 years. Let's take a look at the next slide. And these are pretty simple and straightforward. So we want to develop...
Oh, hey, baby, what's up?
Hi, Doug.
I'm on a meeting.
Doug, could you mute yourself? Okay, there you go. So develop and implement strategies to increase bidder participation. So this came through our discussion that over the years, we have not had as much participation from potential service providers as we would like. So that's not ideal. We'd like to develop and implement strategies to increase bidder participation. That's the first strategic initiative. The second is to expand career pathways that support key industries in the county. That will require that we work closely with education, with labor, with economic development, with business, et cetera, to develop those. Our sector partnerships would be a really appropriate place to start having those discussions. And then finally, it was suggested that over the course of these 3 years, we host an Orange County Workforce Conference, one particular to the needs of businesses and job seekers in Orange County. And, you know, when I think about that, I think about the opportunities available for something really significant. We've got hundreds of partners, stakeholders, allies, and customer groups that we work with. And this would be an opportunity to bring those organizations together for a day or even longer if it were deemed appropriate to do planning and share ideas, et cetera. So with that, those are the 12 sections of the strategic plan. The last slide, I'd simply like to acknowledge and express appreciation to the board members and the staff who participated in this process. So to all the WIB members, thank you. To the staff, thank you. And particularly to those folks here who spent the entire day with us on March 23rd, really giving us their best ideas and thoughts and sharing their personal experiences and insight with us. So thank you very much to everyone. That concludes the overview of the strategic plan you have before you today for your consideration. I am happy to take any questions you might have for me, or Karma and Terry as well are available for that.
Great. Why don't we open this up? Any questions for David, or any comments, any thoughts after reviewing the overview of the strategic plan?
I just have a comment. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
I just want to say I appreciate the work that was done, because it takes a lot of, you know, planning and preparation and then obviously execution to get a plan of this magnitude. And when we think about Orange County, when we're planning for the future as a region, encompassing almost 3 million people, along with all of the different other job seekers that come from the other surrounding counties, it's a lot to take on and to put together. So I just want to say I appreciate the work and all the thought that went into it to get it to where it's at. And I look forward to the future additional participation of our board members as we plan other strategic events to ensure that input from all of you is critical as we move forward and engagement. So thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a very important process. It allows us to look internally at ourselves and sort of question the, you know, what are we here to do? What the why of the Orange County Workforce Development Board? And I think you did an excellent job, David, in really capturing the essence of the conversation that we had there. So My hats are off to you. So thank you so much. Mike, you have a question or comment?
No, it's just a comment. And I'm the historian sometimes, and I've seen a lot of these efforts. And as Rob knows, you know, the board's gone through a lot of transformation. I think this process was very well done and executed. It provided opportunities for board collaboration and input rather than simply reacting to a draft. So I thought it was exemplary. So, and you know, we've gone through a lot of these exercises in the past, but I think this is more relevant and timely than some other past efforts. So I echo what, you know, Rob has said and your comments. I think it's really nicely done. So fully support it.
Todd?
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you for this great plan. I really resonate with a lot of the information that I saw in there about board collaboration, staying reactive, adjusting to things, and being more engaged. So really excited to see these kind of opportunities together to really hone in on taking the value that the board can offer and really delivering it to the community and getting closer to the businesses and overall supporting the economy in a broader way. So very excited to see that.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments before we vote?
Hi, Terry. It's Annalisa.
Yes. Hi, Annalisa.
Great. Thank you to the board. Thank you to the staff. And thank you so much, David, for guiding us through this process. This is exciting. Thank you.
All right. So with that being said, do we have a motion to approve the strategic plan for publishing?
Move to approve.
I'll second Luke's with one minor edit that I emailed to Karma.
Okay. And I have a slight edit as well. Why don't we go to Desiree so she can take the vote?
Gloria Alvarado.
Aye.
Jesse Benron.
Aye.
Kathy Boyd. Rob Claudio motioned. Steve Curiel.
Aye.
Mike Daniel.
Aye.
Lori Holland-Lays.
Aye.
Terry Hollingsworth.
Aye.
Chris Horton. Trung Lay. John Luker.
Aye.
Annalisa seconded the motion. Doug Mangione.
Aye.
Barbara Mason. Gary Mackin. Ernesto Medrano. Carlos Oregon.
Aye.
Mike Ruin.
Aye.
Todd Sword.
Aye.
Brinell Tumor Bias.
Aye.
And that is majority chair.
Okay, great. Motion approved. Okay. All right, moving on then. Thank you so much, David.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm going to leave you to your good work and look forward to the next time I have the opportunity to join you. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Okay, moving on to action item number 6, the Orange County Workforce Solutions Memorandum of Understanding. So Karma, I'll pass that over to you.
Desiree, would you mind promoting Frances? While she's promoting Frances, I'm going to just give you guys a quick overview. So as a workforce system, we are responsible for oversight of the locations. So that is the comprehensive center, the affiliates, and all the satellite offices. The guiding document for those facilities is called an MOU and an infrastructure agreement. What it's supposed to do is to ensure that all partners have access to the system, that there's an opportunity for co-location in the facilities that we provide services, but then also they join in sharing the costs related to operating the facilities. So I want to forewarn before Frances gets into this that we do have a South County location that the Board of Supervisors did recently approve, and that we will be doing this exercise again fairly soon. In addition to that, we will be relocating the Garden Grove office to hopefully Berea soon. So I just want to highlight that so that a couple of months from now, when I ask you to do this again, you don't say, Karma, I just did this. Because we're required to update the MOU and infrastructure agreement whenever we make changes to the system. We are required to do the actual agreements every 2 years, and we are required to review it annually. So if there are changes, to make those changes at that time on an annual basis, but if we're not moving locations, if we're not closing centers, we just review it. And then every 2 years, we are required to recreate an MOU and infrastructure agreement. I hope that makes sense. So with that said, right now we do have the MOU agreement for the Garden Grove location and some of the affiliate sites that we support, but know that we will be making changes in the near future to add on the new locations as we pick them up, so to speak. This agreement is reviewed and approved by the Workforce Development Board first, then it's presented to the Board of Supervisors, and then it's presented to EDD, and then DOL. So I just wanted to give you that progression. With that said, I'm gonna go ahead and let Francis give an overview.
Good morning, everyone. And for those I haven't met yet, I'm Francis Bodden. I'm the Assistant Director of the Orange County Workforce and Economic Development Division. I've just recently joined the team, so hello to those I haven't met yet. So thank you for the introduction, Karma. So basically, she kind of hit on everything already, but I'll go a little bit more detail. So WIOA does require us to enter into the local board to enter into a MOU agreement with the one-stop partners. Part of the MOU does include an infrastructure and cost-sharing allocation plan for the actual locations for those who are co-located. Included in this plan is the Garden Grove comprehensive location. We've also got affiliate sites, which include the Tustin Shelter, the Theo Lacey Center, Probation's Manchester Center. We've got the Orangewood Foundation, the Los Alamitos Joint Training Forces Base, and then also our mobile one-stop unit. As Karma did allude to, we are going to have a couple changes in locations coming up. We have a South County location, which will be coming up hopefully beginning of 2023. And then also in the first quarter of 2023, we'll be starting a transition to a new North County location. That's moving the Garden Grove location. So when those happen, there will be significant changes to the infrastructure agreements, which will require us to come forward again for approval. Also in the near future, it sounds about 6 months away, is probation will be opening up a South County location, and we hope to co-locate in that location also. Also included in the MOU includes the one-stop operator, basically a scope of the services they provide and the selection method used to pick the operator. It provides a list of our partners and the services they provide, provides direction on referral methods and flow charts for clients as they progress through the workforce system. In addition, it includes which partners are required. So WIOA does require us to have certain partners who are mandated partners of the system. That includes like the WIOA adult programs, dislocated worker programs, youth programs, rapid response. We've got Title III, Title IV, Title VI programs as well, which are required. So it itemizes those. A big component of it is the infrastructure agreement. So the infrastructure agreement is basically the cost allocation for if you're going to co-locate in our center, the costs of that center need to be shared. So all the partners had an opportunity to vote on that method. We don't determine what the method is. The partners determine the method themselves. The three main options they have is based on either the number of customers they serve, the space they occupy in the center, or their full-time equivalent staff that they have. All partners decided and voted on using occupied space. So that allocation method was used to determine what the costs were associated with occupying space in the one-stop center. Once we do have a change in locations or add locations, we'll have to add infrastructure agreements for those locations and also hold a vote as to the cost allocation method for those. We do have a total of 33 partners who have signed this MOU. Just for a little perspective, the previous MOU we had 16 partners. So we've basically doubled the amount of partners we have, which is great progression. I don't think we're quite where we want to be. And I think Karma will agree to that. We definitely want to have more people involved in our system because it really does create a collaboration, right? Where we have a great referral system where there are service gaps that one organization can't meet, they can refer clients to another organization in the MOU who can meet those needs. that's all I have for the overview, unless there's any questions anyone has about anything in particular.
Any questions for Francis or regarding the, any questions regarding the MOU? Okay. If not, why don't we take a vote to approve this? Do we have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Okay. And that was Mike Ruane. And do we have a second?
Second, Ben.
Okay. Steve Curiel. Why don't we pass this over to Desiree to take a vote?
Gloria Alvarado.
Aye.
Jesse Benron.
Aye.
Kathy Boyd. Rob Claudio.
Aye.
Steve Curiel seconded the motion. Mike Daniel.
Aye.
Lori Holland-Lays.
Aye.
Terry Hollingsworth.
Aye.
Chris Horton. Trung Lee. John Luker.
Aye.
Aye.
Annalisa Lukes. Annalisa Lukes.
Aye.
Thank you. Doug Mangione. Is Doug still here?
He's there. Doug, you're on mute.
Yes, I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm doing two meetings. So we made a motion. I think I approve.
Thank you. Barbara Mason. Gary Mackin. Ernesto Medrano. Carlos Aragon.
Aye.
Mike Ruane motioned. And Todd Sword.
Approved.
Brinyell Toomer-Bias.
Aye.
And that is majority chair.
Okay. Motion approved. Thank you for that. Moving on to information items, item number 9, the quarter 4 performance, program performance.
Desiree, can we move up Marissa, please?
Oh, I'm sorry, the presentations. We're on 7. Sorry about that. I lost my line here. So we are item number 7, Employment Development Department, Labor Management Information. And Maritza Gamboa will be presenting to us.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. Let me know if you cannot see my screen or if you can't hear me. So good morning. My name is Maritza Gamboa and I am with the Employment Development and Market Information Division. Thank you for providing me the opportunity to speak with you today. I'll start with a quick overview of what's going on statewide and with the surrounding areas, and then I'll focus on Orange County. So the most current data that we do have is for July 2022, and that was just released last Friday. Okay, so let's begin with a look at the state, Orange County, and the surrounding areas. So this chart displays the unemployment rates as of January 2020. Prior to May of that year, you can see that the lines are fairly close to each other. And even between March and April, when COVID first impacted the economy, everyone's rate increased dramatically, but they still remained fairly close together. And then in May, everyone reached their highest unemployment rate, and Los Angeles County, which is the gray line, suffered the largest increase by almost 15%, going from a 4.3% in February before the pandemic hit to a 19.2% in May. And you can tell from the chart that LA really separated itself from the other areas. San Bernardino County had the smallest change of 11%, reaching a 14.7% unemployment rate in May. And then from that month forward, the trend has been going downward, with the exception of a few hiccups when there was COVID surges. As for Orange County's unemployment rate, the blue dotted line, it remained below the state's and all other surrounding counties until April 2020. In May, the county's rate peaked at 15.5%. Then in July 2020, OC reclaimed its spot of having the lowest unemployment rate among the state and surrounding areas with a 12.6%. From that month forward, the county's unemployment rate has remained below other areas. So looking closer at the rates before COVID-19, at the peak of the pandemic and the most current month available, Orange County's July 2022 unemployment rate of 2.8 is the same as the pre-pandemic rate of February 2020. And this is the lowest unemployment rate reported for July of any year. Riverside County has also reached its pre-pandemic rate of 4.0. Los Angeles and San Bernardino counties are still above their pre-pandemic rate. And California and San Diego actually have lower unemployment rates than what they had before the initial pandemic shut down. So this chart shows the various areas employment recovery during the pandemic. The yellow bars are the job losses experienced between the month of February and April 2020, and the blue bars are the number of jobs added between April of 2020 to July 2022. So based on the losses and gains, Riverside and San Bernardino have fully recovered and has actually added an additional 63,600 jobs. California, Orange, and San Diego counties are near full recovery with over 90%, and Los Angeles County has only recovered about 84% of the jobs lost.
I'm sorry, let me jump in. I think we're having trouble hearing Maritza. Is it just me or are others? Okay. Maritza, I don't know if there's anything that you might be able to adjust on your end.
Give me 1 second.
Okay.
I'm gonna see if I can mute and unmute. Mm-hmm. I apologize. Is this better?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I switched headsets. Okay, I'm sorry. Do you want me to go back a little bit or do you want me to continue?
No, you can continue.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we're going to focus on Orange County's industry employment between June and July of 2022. The county increased by 5,600 jobs. Normally between these 2 months, employment actually declines. Additionally, this is the second consecutive month over increase. Last year between June and July, employment increased by over 11,000 jobs. Government declined the most, losing 15,800 jobs, which is a normal seasonal decline as jobs in the schools, come out because of summer break. 82% of the loss was in local government, which includes public education. So this year's decline is the largest month over decrease that industry has experienced as of 1990. A year over, between July 2021 and July 2022, the county increased by 73,400 jobs. 9 of the 11 industry sectors added jobs over the year. Almost half of the total year over increase was in leisure and hospitality, which added 35,200 jobs. Financial activities was the only industry sector to lose jobs, declining by 3,500 jobs. Okay, so Orange County is still remains below the February 2020 pre-pandemic non-farm employment level of 1,683,400 jobs. The county has recovered about 93% of the 269,400 jobs lost during the pandemic. Looking at the major industry sectors, 9 sectors have recovered some, if not all, of the job loss. And of those 9 sectors, 5 industries have fully recovered. And that's education and health services, construction, professional and business services, leisure and hospitality, and information. Government is the only sector to not recover any of the job loss and instead has continued to shed jobs. This chart shows the losses and gains for each of the industry sectors. The chart is ranked by the largest to smallest employment loss between February and April 2020, which are the yellow bars on the left side. Leisure and hospitality experienced the largest decline, losing 92,700 jobs, and has gained the most jobs between April 2020 and July 2022. You can see that if we rank the employment gains from April 2020 to July 2022, the order of industries would not be the same. And then in addition, you can see here that only government remains on the left side of the chart. In addition to looking at what industries have fully recovered and those that have not, this slide shows additional jobs added by those industries that have fully recovered, and also the number of jobs still left to be recuperated by those in red. So educational and health services have added the most jobs, increasing by an additional 6,300 jobs after having recovered the 31,900 job loss during the initial months of the pandemic. However, within that sector, educational services has lost an additional 200 jobs, but healthcare and social assistance has fully recovered and has added an additional 6,500 jobs. The government is still short about 20,000 jobs, and the shortfall is among all three federal, state, and local government. And local government has the largest deficit of 19,100 jobs. Okay, so here's a look at the levels of job advertisements. The yellow line are the total number of ads, and the blue line are the number of ads that offer the opportunity to work from home. So during the initial months of the shutdown between February and April 2020, the total number of ads decreased by about 56%. However, the number of ads that offered telework increased by almost 60%. So since the beginning of 2020, the number of ads that advertise opportunity to telework has been steadily increasing. So here's a comparison chart of top occupations, top industries, and top employers with the most job ads, the total ads versus those with telework opportunities for the most recent month of July 2022. Among the top occupations, registered nurses continue to dominate at the top of the list for all ads. However, that occupation does not appear among the top five for telework opportunities. Other occupations such as sales representatives, software developers, and managers appear on both sides. As for the top industries with the most ads, finance and insurance and educational services appear under work from home, but not under all ads. And accommodation and food services and retail trade are among the top five under all ads, but do not appear under the work from home column. And then there are the top employers. So Cedar Sinai have the most job ads, and their top occupations are trying to fill our registered nurses, our nursing assistants, and laboratory tech. The Boeing company ranked number one with the most ads offering telework, and their top three telework occupations are software developers, computer systems engineers, and civil engineers. Okay. So of the 2,000 or so advertisements that are categorized under work from home for July that have also identified the skills requirements in their job postings, these are the top specialized software and baseline skills that are being asked for by employers. In addition, I've also included the advertised salary ranked by the number of ads. And the majority of the ads for telework are offering more than $75,000 a year. And these include occupations such as, you know, software developers, computer occupations, accountants and auditors, and managers. And I've also posted the mean annual salary and the median annual salary. So the majority of the ads that offer work from home opportunities are requesting the minimum of a bachelor's degree. For those advertisements that also identify the amount of experience required, employers who are seeking a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree are requesting at least 3 to 5 years of experience. However, those asking for a high school diploma or associate's degree are asking for none or at least 2 years of experience. Okay, so, to conclude, I hope everybody has visited our website to access various types of labor market information. Most of the information that I spoke about today is available on our website, such as the unemployment rates, industry employment, and the job advertisement data. All items in blue font of our homepage is an active link to data. So there's a lot to explore. And I thank you for inviting me. I apologize again for a rough start to the presentation. Please contact me if you have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Marenza. It was still a little difficult to hear you even after you made some adjustments, but I think we were able to follow along with the charts. So why don't we open it up to the group? Any questions, comments, anything that you've noted as part of Marissa's presentation that you'd like to talk about?
Just a comment for me. Hi, Marissa. I just wanted to say thank you for the comparison information on the telework options that employers are offering, because it kind of speaks to some of the challenges that we're facing and filling some positions, not only for the employers in the county, but even with our own agency, because there's so many that are asking or requesting that up front. So I appreciated that. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree with that, Rob. We are here, even at the association, are hearing the same thing from our own staff here, preferring to work from home. And, so there's a challenge there, because leadership feels that we're better together in person. So that's something that we're, dealing with, and I'm sure other organizations out there are dealing with. Todd?
Yeah, Maritza, thank you so much for this great data. It's fascinating to see that we've recovered so much in so many areas, and that's fantastic. I did have a question. Are we seeing any wage differences between working at home and working in person, and any other kind of differences that we might incorporate that are different about working from home job seekers and their success there?
So if you recall from the slide that showed the advertised salary for the work from home opportunities, the majority of the jobs that are offering work from home opportunities are those that are more on the managerial, engineering, computer occupational related occupations. So those wages are obviously on the higher side than those where, retail trade or in-person occupations are needed. So if you're talking about differences in wages, yes, work from home opportunities tend to be on the higher end versus those jobs that are in person. But that's usually the case, whether you're working from home or not, based on the actual occupation itself.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you so much. And then just one question about, I think maybe it was a seasonal thing, but when we saw that graph that showed the government jobs drop significantly, was that just from school teachers for a summer period, or was that for an entire year?
So normally government does decline between the months of June and July, just because of seasonality and because of schools going on summer break. So that's pretty normal. And that's okay. The majority of the decline was in the public education sector. So,
okay. So those teachers' jobs come back, obviously. So that's just a summer 3-month glimpse. Okay.
Yeah, we're looking at hopefully when the numbers come out next month that we start seeing an increase again in local government.
Perfect. Great. Thanks so much, Marcia. Really appreciate it. It's good to see which parts of the economy are kind of up and down and what's growing and shrinking. So thank you.
Thank you, and you're welcome.
And Maritza, great presentation. I just want to ask a little more clarity on that government question, especially with education. Someone who works in that area, familiar with the trends, but also more specific, a question that the staff that are considered unemployed, are those based on them self-reporting, going to EDD and saying I'm unemployed, or is it something from HR at each of the school districts, you reach out to them and ask how many are actually in paid status, receiving a paycheck? How is that calculated?
So our industry employment data is collected via survey, and every month a select number of employers are surveyed. But when it comes to government, we are on understanding that it's a seasonal job, and most teachers, most educators go off track in June. So that seasonality gets taken into account every single year. And when we do the survey, it comes back and we do see people coming back. However, with COVID-19, it's a little different because a lot of teachers either left completely or have not returned because of a different environment. And we're trying to capture that as well. So it's government's always been tricky, especially the public education sector. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it's a seasonality. And if we look back into our records back to 1990, the decline has been in the thousands between June and July. So there's really no surprise in terms of the decline, but it's something that's pretty much normal.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other questions? Great. Well, thank you so much, Maritza.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Moving on to our next presentation, Introduction into New WEOA Title I Career Service Provider Career Teams, James Hughes, who's the Career Team Regional Director of Operations.
Good morning, everyone. I know that Anthony is also in the, not the panelist section, but the other section. Is there a way we can bring him over to the other one?
Is that Anthony Arevalo?
Yes, ma'am.
Perfect.
There he is. All right. Good morning, and thank you for having us. We're excited to present to you guys and let you guys know who we are as Career Team. So as mentioned, my name is James Hughes. I'm the Regional Director of Operations. I've been working with Career Team now for going on 4 years, been doing workforce development about a third of my lifetime. Very excited to be in the Orange County area. I live actually out of Washington State, so I'm also on the West Coast of the country. And then we also have Anthony. I'll let Anthony introduce himself.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Anthony Revelo. I am the program manager for the Adult Dislocated Worker Program. I am new to the workforce development sector. I come from a heavy business operations background. My last role as the director of operations at NBC Universal. So I'm very excited to be here and to provide the services for the community. Born and raised in Los Angeles, so I'm very well versed in the community as well as the local communities. So I'm excited to be here and be part of this movement and provide excellent service.
So just a little bit about our organization. So we are a small national firm. We have operations over on the East Coast in Washington, D.C., Kentucky, Florida, North Carolina, Texas, and also on the West Coast as well. And actually, I kind of like mentioning the fact that we're a small national organization because we bring a lot of best practices from all over the country, but we're small enough to kind of shift and be agile. We're a scrappy bunch of groups of individuals for our company. We have a couple internal models. We have a lot of weird sayings that, you know, it's kind of like our own tribal language. One of the things that we try to focus in on is serving our customers deeper, which kind of leads to like our technology and our high touch, high tech approach. So what I mean by that, anyone who has had direct service experience, you can probably relate to, you know, working with a customer. And as soon as the transactional part is done, the customer might not want to stay engaged with you. So we really try to provide that transformation over transactional services. We understand the importance of spin down. However, we also understand the importance of making sure we don't have repeat customers, because we don't want to see, you know, people just every 5 years going right back into the system. We don't think that that's good use of our funding that we're getting from the government at all. So within our organization, we have two lines, two vertical lines. One is going to be our technology line, and that I'll show you guys our technology product, our Career Edge today, and then also our direct service. So inside of direct service, we do business services, Title I services, TANF services, SNAP, employment and training, the full gambit. And some parts of the country, we're also even acting as the labor exchange services providers as well, and then one-stop operation services. And then on our tech side, we actually work a lot with our local workforce boards, our colleges, and then also some of our local government agencies, and providing our technology to help get customers into career opportunities, but also help them increase their professional and then life skill or soft skill development. Within our organization here locally, Anthony will be, like I said, the program manager. We also have two supervisors and then two training coordinators and then 20 case managers. Our training coordinators are actually individuals I like to call our ninjas internally, because they kind of dabble in multiple places, but their main job is to really help support all of our customers going into training. And then also like our conduit between our business services team here locally, and then also our job seekers. With that, like I said, we like to think a little scrappy and think a little dangerously at time. Our training coordinators currently are putting together some hiring event preps. So I had a chance to sit in on the last meeting, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, and I was just listening to some of the hiring events that are coming up, or some of the hiring events that have taken place. And I just kind of sparked an idea for Anthony and I to say, like, hey, we can actually start getting prep events for these hiring events. So like our approach is really to be collaborative and show a lot of partnership. We don't want to just be a Title I provider that just enrolls people. We want to add to the system. We want to bring value. And most importantly, we want to push the limit. We want to see how far we can go, how far we can expand, how deep we can serve within our community there in Orange County. Looking at our outreach and marketing plan there for Orange County, I've had some great conversations with our contract manager, Zitali, about like some approaches to really reach the customers in the South region of Orange County, because we know that that's been a challenge in the past. So we're actually currently right now building what's called a Orange County Blitz plan. That's kind of creating like a list of all of our community organizations. And we're literally want to get in our staff out to the community to let them know who we are, our services that we can offer and things like that, and really help create some pipeline referrals and kind of get that movement going. You know, being an old case manager myself, I always feel like if you're not in the community, you're not making things happen. The work is actually outside of the walls. We want to serve really well inside the walls, but we want to be very present also outside of the walls and making connections and building community relationships. So I'll show you guys just our Career Edge platform. Can I share screens? Do I have permission? Can I do that? Yeah. Yes. Okay. Okay. Give me a thumbs up when you guys can see it. Anybody? Thank you. Solid. So this is our Career Edge platform. Our Career Edge platform, we use it as a learning management system. You know, we use this inside of all of our direct service contracts. And this is actually the tool that we use to kind of build that connectivity, but also build traction with our customers. Being an old case manager, like I said myself, you know, there were times I would meet with a customer, we would work on something, a resume, interviewing, networking. And then when they would come back the week later, I felt like I was spending about 40% of my time kind of rehashing what we already went over. So we have developed this tool to really help our customers engage and build more traction, even when they're not sitting face to face with us. You know, like I said, our saying is high tech, high touch. So we want to make sure that we are training our job seekers for, you know, automation, being able to navigate different, you know, digital literacy opportunities, but also at the same time, increasing their professional development and then also their soft skill development. We're working right now with the board. This site is actually going to be located, I believe, on the Orange County site. And I might be getting the Orange County. I'm pretty sure I'm saying it correctly. They're Orange County. Yeah. Okay. It's going to be located on the Orange County site. So like when they click on the Orange County site, this will have a hyperlink and it'll take them straight to there. But this is what the site looks like right now. I'll kind of go through it a little bit. Typically when we do a demo, it's about an hour long. So I'm gonna keep it short within our timeline for sure. So on this site, you'll see, this is the homepage. This is definitely not me. This is Harrison. He's our chief innovation officer. So he's the architect behind all of the technology with our organization. But inside of our site, you'll see that we have our menus link. Inside of our menus link, it kind of takes us and navigates us through the whole tool. So I'll just start out with our life skills. So inside of our life skills, we have 15 different life skill topics. And we are constantly putting together more and more new content as well. Over the last couple of years, we've gotten a chance to really dig deeper into critical thinking, our leadership skill development, interpersonal communication, DEI, and then also emotional intelligence. But we have vertical and horizontal modules. So just to give you a quick example of what that might look like, our vertical module looks like this. It's just vertical, up and down. Inside, we really try to touch in on different learning styles. So there's always going to be a video or a coach explaining what's happening in the module. There's always going to be like a workbook opportunity for people that like to read and flip pages. Even the same thing for like learning like small content. We want to make sure people can learn with small content and then kind of increase that. But then we want to put it to the test as well. So we have different like assignments that they can take, that they can work with their case manager on and different things like that. And then at the end, there's always an opportunity for anyone to take a 10 question quiz. And that's important, as you guys know, in WIOA, there's a huge emphasis over the last couple of years in credential attainment, but also measurable skills gain. So making sure that people are actually learning something, they're not just coming to get like an activity, but they're actually increasing their competency level. So within everything that we do on Career Edge, there's a chance for the customer to actually take a quiz and then show like their skill gain. I like to have customers take the test at the beginning and then also at the end, so we can kind of show that percentage increase. And also it looks good for our case notes for the monitors too. They love that stuff. So going back to our life skills, so that's our vertical. Horizontal modules look like this. So they kind of go from left to right, just like if you're reading a book. You'll see that, you know, you watch a video, you do a reflection, you watch a video, do a reflection, watch a video, and then you'll also have an opportunity to take a quiz as well. So the reason why we broke up our modules this way, again, we've done some study over the last couple of years and how adults learn. We realized that COVID really kind of changed the game of how people are learning. They need to get information fast. They want to be able to have it on their phone, on their tablet. So we really made sure that all of our content and all of our learning was fast, quick, but it was enough content that they can actually walk away and apply the information. So that's our life skills. You'll see just a quick example of some of our professional development. So we have things such as like on-the-job success, preparing for the interview, answering difficult questions, planning for your future. And these modules are used in and out of the customer's life of the program. So like if they're coming in and we realize that they're really going to be changing careers and they're going from maybe a blue collar to white collar, understanding how to have effective communication and networking is going to be important. So we'll dive into that. Or maybe they're prepping for an interview, so we want to make sure they're ready to go for that interview. So we really use Career Edge to the uniqueness of the customer, what the customer needs. In addition, we also have, which is personally probably my favorite part of Career Edge, which is our toolkit. So inside of our toolkit, we have 9 different elements. I think I remember hearing David talk a little bit about the entrepreneurship within the strategic plan, which I was actually kind of really excited to hear about. On here, we have what's called like a creating a business plan. And what this is, it's literally a 5-step or a 4-step way to help our customers create like their actual business plan. Now, typically they don't download this and use this as their business plan, but this will help them create the business plan. So it'll talk about things like creating your mission statement. It'll talk about, you know, looking to things about, you know, what are you bringing to the table? What are you trying to accomplish within your personal business and then your products and services? And then even all the way down to like your marketing plan, like how are you going to market your business and build out like, you know, what does your competitors look like? What is your strategy? How do you identify your markets and your targets and things like that? I think this is a pretty unique and valuable tool. I think one thing we saw out of COVID that was that people were saying, hey, I'm going to like leave the whole working for another person. I'm going into business for myself. but where do I start, right? Do I do a nonprofit? Do I do an LLC? So kind of going through these four different steps, help them create their own business plan. And then they can actually download that. And then like when they're going downtown or going downtown, when they're going to the courthouse to get like their license or whatnot, they can kind of bring this with them to help answer some of those questions that are going to be asked of them to kind of get their job or their business up and running. Another fun thing about our toolkit, we're pretty interactive. So right here, you'll see, let me turn my camera off so you can see what this looks like. 1 second. There we go. Perfect. All right, so this is our interview simulator. This was actually pretty cool because I love testing people on their interview and then helping them increase their interview competency so they can win the job. I always say that getting people to the interview is not the hardest part of my job. It's actually making sure they're successful within their interview. That's when they win the job. So we have an actual interview simulator. For example, let's do like a test. There we go. So inside of our interview simulator, you'll see there's going to be a coach off to your left-hand side. They're going to ask you some questions. We have about 15 different like interview questions, your typical interview questions, you know, talk to me about, there's a gap in your employment. Talk to me about why, what are your greatest weaknesses? What are your greatest strengths and things like that? But if you ever find yourself not able to answer a question, we also have a coach that talks to you about each and every one of these questions. I like this because when we record, you can see if people are doing this in their chair, right? Or if they keep saying, or like, you know, if there's something crazy in their background or whatever the case may be, it's these small things that we have realized that we have like had to get better at because of COVID, right? All of us have video etiquette and things like that. So these are things we're able to teach our customers. As you guys were having a conversation about work from home jobs, I know some of the national stats show that 62 jobs or one out of 62 jobs were actually work from home before the pandemic. Now it's about one out of every seven. So work from home is becoming more prominent. People want to do it more. However, if you're going to work from home, you have to be able to win the job sometimes in the virtual interview setting. So this helps out a lot with that. So this is kind of one of my favorite tools on our toolkit. Of like a resume builder, a budget calculator, e-portfolio, cover letter, a mentor letter, a thank you letter, and then also a mock job application. I'll just briefly show you guys the resume builder because of time. So our resume builder is broken down into five sections. So you start out, it's going to ask you, like, tell me about yourself. You can put your information in there. You can go down to your summary. You can go down to your work experience. You can show your education and then also voluntary or any credentials or certifications that you might have. And then you can actually choose your resume style right here. You can see that our developers have a lot of fun when it comes to like creating the names and, you know, titles like LeBron Jobs or Dwayne Jobson, whatever the case may be. But so they can choose their resume template. And the cool thing about this is they can download it as a Word document. You can also download it as a PDF if you would like to, but you can download it as a Word document so you can always edit your resume. This has probably saved us about 40% of our time working with customers with resumes, because when they come to us, they've already started the process. They've already dug into it. So when we're making corrections and we're coaching, they're already like 40% of the way there. The average resume conversation with a customer can take anywhere between 30 to like 47 minutes. So imagine saving 40 minutes on time and then also allowing the customer to have more empowerment to be able to work on their own resume throughout the day, on the bus, on the train, you know, just waiting for an appointment or whatever the case may be. They can use this on their phone, tablet, or also their laptop, anywhere that has Wi-Fi. So we also have two assessments on here. We have one, which is our career cluster inventory assessment. This helps our customers find out what type of career they want to jump into based off of an algorithm broken down by if you like or dislike pictures. So like you'll hit like or dislike, like very much, not sure. It'll actually spit out results for you. And once you see the results, it'll tell you your top three industries that you would be interested in. The cool thing about that is now you can kind of go down what I call the rabbit hole. And then like really look into that that market and see more things about the market, different type of job titles, the education, the different pathways, other related careers, if the job is going to be good for you, kind of an overview of the job and things like that. And then our second assessment we have is actually our personality assessment, which is actually pretty simple. You know, it's a 4-question, you take it and it'll actually spit out for you your personality. But the personality information is going to help you build information on job searching. So imagine doing a personality assessment like the Myers-Briggs, but the information you're going to look at is going to help you do job search. So not just like learning who you are, how you communicate, but now you can see, okay, here's some of your weaknesses. Here's some of your strengths that you should work on going into the job search. So I know we only have 20 minutes. So I want to take a moment just to pause. I don't know how I'm doing on time. I didn't get a chance to time myself on this. Are we doing all right on time? No, we're not doing all right. We're doing bad on time. Okay. Am I over?
A little bit.
I will I will stop there and ask, is there any questions that we can answer? I know that was a lot to try to squeeze in. So
any questions? It's a great platform. Thank you for sharing with us. Just a quick question. So would you need to be a program participant in order to access those resources, or is it available to the public?
Great. Oh, I'll let you take it. Go ahead.
Well, the way we did the contract is in the resource room, you can access Career Edge. That's how we set it up right now. Technically, under the one-stop operator, anything that we offer for free for everyone should be covered under the operator contract, but we agreed to allow this software to be in the resource room and maybe on the mobile unit and some of the resource areas for us, but typically it wouldn't be. All the WIOA participants do have access to this. So we're trying to determine how do we keep balance of ensuring that, because he has a contract for WIOA services only, he doesn't have a contract for the youth or any of the other programs that we support in the center, right? So I'm trying to make sure that we keep balance in, so we don't get audited and have a compliance finding for offering a service outside of WIOA to the general public using WIOA dollars. So I'm trying to create a healthy balance with that. So we are offering in the resource room. It is in the mobile unit. We are trying to figure out how do we offer it on the website so that WIOA participants who need access to it can access it. So more to come on that, Terry, but we are trying to find solutions similar to this or figuring out how to do this with the one-stop operator so that everyone can use it.
Got it. Thank you. Any other questions? Well, great. Well, thank you so much, James and Anthony. This has been very helpful for us to see this demonstration of your platform and hear more about your services. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you guys. Appreciate the time that you guys gave us. I know we went a little bit over the time. We really were excited to show you our platform and what we're going to do in the future and what we look forward to doing for the community of Orange County, and can't wait to continue to serve. Thank you guys.
Thank you. All right. Okay, now we are at information item in the information item section number 9, quarter four program performance.
So I'm just going to keep it brief because we've already reviewed all the performance with all the committees. We've attached the performance information within this document. So there are no red flags. I think that all the committees have reviewed it. They've expressed their concerns or areas where they'd like to see improvement. And so staff is working on that. So if there are any questions or concerns, I can address any questions about the performance material attached, but we did review all of this with the subsequent committee.
Great. Any questions? All right, moving on to item 10, regional initiatives and comprehensive economic development strategy, SEDS update.
Again, we reviewed this with the committees. Let me see, is Annette Kelly, can we promote Annette up? Desiree?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, Desiree, are you going to put up the slide? Or? Thank you. So on August the 21st, the three workforce development boards, Santa Ana, Anaheim, and Orange County, all met for the first time. David Schinder facilitated the meeting. And during that meeting, one of the exercises was to select one of four regional indicators that has been identified by the state of California that they would like our regions to focus on. The four regional indicators are: the region has a process to communicate industry workforce needs to supply side partners, the region has policies supporting equity and strives to improve job quality, the region has shared target populations of emphasis, and the region deploys shared pooled resources to provide services, training, and education to meet target population needs. The workforce development boards, they collectively selected to focus on indicator A, which is region has process to communicate industry workforce needs to supply side partners. So as we move forward in our regional work, I will be working with the three workforce development workforce areas, the staff members, to identify ways to measure the outcomes. So one of them being region has developed benchmark measurements to track improvement and the number of individuals placed in jobs that align with sectors and occupations emphasized in the regional plan. And the region has developed benchmarks and methods to track workforce partner professional development training on the priority sectors industry workforce needs. Next slide, please. Some of the possible process measures are percentage of individuals served who will attain employment related to training, distribution of job placements that align to the top sectors and occupations emphasized in the regional plan, identification of top sectors and occupations that provide provide quality jobs, percentage of frontline staff participating in training, percentage of professional development participants required, including we are required partners who report training supported their understanding of employer needs and priority sectors and jobs. So these are some of the possible process measures. So I will work with the three local workforce areas though to kind of really figure out how we are going to track what data we currently have or need to be able to gather in order to track our performance under this particular indicator. The board also kind of started the work just as far as vision and mission. David went over the vision and mission in just a high level. So he will do some follow-up work with polling because we did not get through the entire agenda during this meeting. And everyone should have received the PowerPoint and recording for this meeting on August 8th that was sent out. So hopefully you received that. And if you weren't able to attend, you can take a look at that information. And if we can go to the next slide, please. Some additional things that are going to be happening on October 6th from 9 to 11, there will be a virtual training that David Schinder will facilitate. It will be just workforce development board training. So anyone who's new or would like to kind of learn more in regards to workforce development board training or have the opportunity to ask additional questions during that time, David will be doing that one for all three workforce development board areas. And then on the regional and local plan, right now we are going to be moving into our two-year plan modification process. There is a draft directive out by the state of California, and on September 1st, we will kind of be kicking that off. We will be having some meetings starting September the 22nd and 23rd. And Karma, I think that you made the decision that you would like the board involved in that September 22nd meeting, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so we will get on a notice for that particular meeting. The first meeting, September 22nd, that first day, will mainly be around the regional plan, and then the second day will be around the local plans. That first day meeting will be from 9 to 4. And so we will get a notice out and let you know if you need to be there for that full time frame or how much of that will be about the regional plan. And then from there, we will be having community sessions, community and stakeholder meetings that will start around October 1st between October 1st and December 15th. So we don't have those dates just yet, but I will work with David to identify what those are and get those out into the community. And then, let's see, the next regional board meeting with all three regional directors. The plan is to have these twice a year. So the next one will be January 25th from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. And you should have already received notification for that particular meeting. That will also be another time where David will go over the local and regional plan that will be in draft form, ready for submission. We would have to, it will be opened up for 30-day comment period, and then basically needs to be submitted to state by March 31st. And then we've launched our industry sector meetings. So we started with healthcare and manufacturing. We did not launch the information technology as of yet. So we are gonna be focused on healthcare and manufacturing, and then look at when we're going to move into the information technology. Looking for all the support I can get from the board in regards to just identifying businesses that would be willing to participate. We need to kind of strengthen the number of businesses that we do have at this organization. Terry has been particularly helpful with the healthcare industry, but definitely looking for other board members that can support and bringing those businesses to the table, as well as other partners who are interacting with businesses. The goal is to really have strong industry sector partnerships that are regional by nature, that we are not having multiple amongst our different partners in education and economic development, DOR, that we really all bring them together and we can get businesses, a lot of businesses at one meeting as opposed to a small number at various meetings. So that's the goal. We will be working on a regional website and collateral with copy and design. Hopefully within the next month or so, we can kick that off to be able to kind of have a place where we talk about our regional initiatives, such as the industry sectors, and be able to engage businesses in that a little deeper and our partners, as well as really work on the communication and how we are presenting ourselves to the region from a regional perspective, not only from the Workforce Development Boards, but our industry partners. There's our colleges, you know, they're involved in kind of business services space. So you'll hear economic development, business services in various areas, but really trying to make a streamlined message to where we all agree and can move forward and communicating to our business partners so that they're not confused about who's who, who's doing what, all of those different things. So that will be the goal of that. Regional grants, we did not get the Good Jobs grant. There were about 519 applications and 33 awards. Do have some good projects that are part of that. So we will be looking at those projects and trying to see how we may be able to move those forward in a different way, whether that be through other grant funding or WIOA funding. The Regional Equity and Recovery Partnership grant, that grant was awarded at $1.3 million. This is the regional grant that funds the regional organizer position, my position, along with 15 other local workforce areas. There's a regional organizer across the state of California. And they changed the name of it to Regional Equity and Partnership Grant versus the Slingshot Regional Implementation, which it was called before. We're on Regional Implementation 4.0. So in this particular grant, they required us to partner with the community colleges, and we had to identify how we would strengthen our alignment, as well as identify projects that we would move forward as a region with our community college partners collectively. So the $1.3 million is really more about system alignment and the work that we are currently doing under the region. There's an additional $10 million that's going to be awarded across the state of California to our community college partners for the projects that we submitted as a part of this grant application. So we have not heard about who's going to be awarded under that particular portion of this grant. So the 1.3 million is just for systems work. So we should, they will be going before the Board of Governors, I think in September. So it is after that point in time that we should know about which projects got funded for the community colleges. The California Equity and Recovery Grant has been submitted. And you can check out the website ocrise.com if you want to see the actual submission as well as look at past meetings. But this grant took a lot of work. It was a lot of fun, I think, in really working with the community and bringing everyone together in a process that probably we've done on a larger scale, right? We've done it on a smaller scale, but bringing together a lot of stakeholders into a process that where they were the decision makers in how we move things forward. So I encourage you to take a look at that. Hopefully we will hear about that award next month also. The Prison to Employment Grant was submitted on August the 1st. And so that is a kind of, that's a grant that's already was in our region. So Santa Ana was leading the Prison to Employment program and they resubmitted an application. So we should hear about that one no later than December. And that's all I have. If you have any questions.
Any questions for Annette? Thank you for that presentation, Annette. Okay, great. Well, thank you. All right, I think we're ready to move on to item number 11, grants update.
Yes, so at each of the three standing committees, we reviewed the grants. So at this time, I don't have any additional updates. Are there any questions or concerns in regards to the grant updates?
Any questions? Okay, if not, we'll move on. EDD compliance audit updates.
Again, at each of the corresponding subcommittees, I reviewed the EDD compliance and audit updates. Are there any questions or concerns?
Okay. All right. Last item on the agenda. Chair and Director's update. I don't have anything to report out. Karma, how about you?
No, what I was going to report out, Annette just did. So I just want to remind the board that we definitely need your participation. The regional work is one of the requirements of this of the Workforce Board. It is important that you interact with the other two Workforce Boards that make up our Orange County region. So if you can attend our meetings, please do so. If you have any questions or concerns in regards to the region or what we're trying to accomplish, feel free to contact me or Annette. We'd be happy to answer any questions you have about the region and the WEOA requirements for the region.
Okay. And I also want to give the board members an opportunity to share any new news, any questions that you might have. So we'll open up and allow the group to speak. Okay, anything you'd like to share? If not, well, great. Well, thank you all for joining us today. The meeting is adjourned and thank you for your time today. Have a great day.